अरविंद की जय। कामदेव भक्त अरविंद की जय।
Shukru Vajra, Vishu Vajra, 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 Vajra,
The answer is that the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in its pure consciousness as a part and parcel of the Lord, and thus be engaged in the loving service of the Lord as he is constitutionally made. Because the living entity is partially independent also, he may not be willing to serve the Lord, but may try to become as independent as the Lord is. All the non-devotee living entities are desirous of becoming equal as powerful as the Lord, although they are not fit to become so. The living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because they want to become like him. Take a person who thinks of becoming a king without possessing the necessary qualification. When the living entity desires to become the Lord himself, he is put in a condition of dreaming that he is a king. Therefore, the first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord, and the consequent will of the Lord is that the living entity forget its actual life and thus dream of the land of Utopia, where he may become one life of the Lord. The child cries to have the moon from the mother, and the mother gives the child a mirror to satisfy the child and disturb the child with the reflection of the moon. The loving, crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection of the material world, to lord it over as a tyrant, and to give this up in frustration, become one with the Lord. Both these stages are dreaming illusions only. There is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this. But the fact is that as soon as he desired, he was put under the control of Atma Maya by the direction of the Lord. Therefore, the living entity in imagination is dreaming falsely that this is mine, that this is I. The dream is that the conditioned soul thinks of his material body as I, or falsely thinks that he is the Lord and that everything in connection with that material body is mine. Thus, only in dreaming does the misconception of I and mine persist life after life. This continues life after life as long as the living entity is not purely conscious of its identity as the subordinate part and parcel of the Lord.
Will you kindly explain this?
was known to you. So here's what Prabhupada requires, what Prabhupada calls the perfect answer. The cause is the influence of Atmamaya. It is the will of the Lord. And by that will of the Lord, the pure soul, which is natively or is constitutionally pure, the soul is pure, is able to identify itself with the material body. This is an upaya, an illusory superimposition. Think of myself as this body, or as a relationship to the body, as mine, I am mama. This will be the step. What is it like seeing a dreamer seeing his own body at work? In other words, there is no relationship except by the influence of the energy of the Lord. We are not the cause, and that the Lord causes this identification. You're asleep in your dream. In the dream, you create a dream body. You identify yourself with the dream body. In that dream, you're undergoing the nightmare of material existence. This proper description that, of what happens. In that nightmare, you're in the jungle, you're being pursued in a jungle at night. At night in a jungle and being pursued by a tiger and being terrified on his path. And you're trying to run through the jungle. Of course, it's night time, you can't see. You keep hitting in the face with branches, running in the trees. Being tripped by vines and falling into this underbrush, feet into the mud. And all the while as you're struggling, you can hear the tiger crashing behind you, getting closer and closer and louder and louder. And your terror increases and increases and increases. And you can hear behind you, you know, his feet. And then there's a silence because he's in the air. And then suddenly, you know, they kill by breaking their neck. And so suddenly there's the tiger's teeth and jaws, and his jaws, and the neck starting to twist. You can smell that meaty tiger, rotten meat breath, and your hands twisting, and you're about to die. You scream in terror, and you wake up. You're safe. The moon is shining through the window. Curtains are drawn in the gentle breeze. Were you ever in any danger? No. Were you always safe? Yes. But we have projected ourselves into this illusion and identified as being body and making something. And if we're psyched out of illusion, there's no relation. In my dream, if I say, what is the distance? How many centimeters is it from the tip of the tiger's tail to the pole on the foot of the bed? Take a measure. How far is it from the tiger's tail to the foot of the bed?
What kind of question is that?
There's no relationship. So there's no relationship. So this is what happened. We are absorbed in this material conception. It's not my honest, it's the Lord's power that does it. And Prabhupada recites Bhagavad Gita 15, how this happens. Matam Sniffir Yana Kopanja, I'm sitting in the Rimas Hakana for me, comes remembrance. One day we remember me. It's because we can remove this energy and win it again. Because I couldn't forget. He does it. He does it to us.
They are both influenced by the Lord. Because we are subordinate to the Lord, we are subordinate. This question is asked, Prabhupada raises this question in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. If the spirit soul is parashakti, and the material energy is aparashakti, how can the inferior energy control the superior energy? And Prabhupada said, because this inferior energy is actually the energy of Krishna, who is always in control, and he puts the living entities under that control of the inferior energy. So Prabhupada says, the next question automatically made, well, if it, God is doing this, why? Why is he doing it? Why does he influence the living entity to such consciousness? Remembering Krishna, real consciousness, or sleep, forgetfulness. Why does he do it? Well, the first thing is that really what Prabhupada is saying is Krishna doesn't want to do it. Even though he's God, sometimes what he wants doesn't happen. You notice this about the world. Although he's all-powerful Lord, still, what he wants doesn't always happen, because he wants the living being is pure consciousness, understand I am part and parcel of the Lord, and engage in loving service. I mean, constitutionally made, it's my nature. But, and Prabhupada explains, there's this little thing that Krishna doesn't control. That's the tiny independence of the living being. If you say it's our free will, that means that the origin of this decision to go to Krishna, become a servant of Krishna, or try to become his competitor, that decision can only be referred to ourselves, our free will. Our own free decision. What caused it? Well, it has no cause in a sense because it's free will. But it's just our decision. If it's free, even though there may be different influential factors, ultimately it's us. It's my decision. He may not be willing to serve the Lord. That's it. If Krishna didn't allow me to have this free will, I wouldn't be part and parcel of it. I'd be material energy. But I'm spiritual energy. Prabhupada said we are tiny samples of God. We can understand about God by studying ourselves, because we are small samples of God. If he's got unlimited freedom, we've got a little bit of freedom. So we may not be willing to serve the Lord. Now, so this is the exercise. May try to become as independent as the Lord is. This is the forgetfulness of our constitutional tradition. And it's a denial of reality. But never when we're talking about the Lord, we're meaning the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We mean that from which everything has come, and that whose energies make all of reality. The truth of the matter is, there's nothing but Sri Krishna. To forget Krishna means to forget absolutely everything. To not know Krishna means not to know myself either, and not even to know this world. The world that we see in Maya with the spirit of enjoyment is not the real world. It's not even the real so-called material world. It's a dream imposed upon the reality. It's like the traditional example of seeing a rope when you see a snake. You can close this eye. We don't even see this world. The bewilderment is total. You forget Krishna. You become ignorant of Krishna. You become ignorant of everything. We remember Krishna. Let's say about this briefing. Although, because of the living entity's third freedom, things happen that Krishna doesn't want to happen, at the same time, he remains all powerful because we cannot exercise our negative ideas or our God budgets without Krishna's living entity. We are still, although we deny Krishna's control, in order to assert our independence from Krishna, we do it by Krishna's mercy. So, when we fly away from Krishna, Krishna is the wings. So still, he remains in control. And when we're conscious of Krishna, he's in control of us directly and favorably. When we're unconscious of Krishna, he's controlling us indirectly and unfavorably through the illusory energy, Maya Devi, the pure Devi. Either way, you see, we are controlled by Krishna. Our freedom is we get to choose how we wish to be controlled by Krishna. Directly or favorably or indirectly or unfavorably. So still Krishna remains the supreme controller. But within that we have our freedom, and so things happen that Krishna doesn't want to happen. He doesn't want a single one of us to be in line. But we are allowed to exercise our freedom. So what do we do? Prabhupada is basically saying, you know, we are engaged in a project of becoming God. He says here, listen to this, all the non-devoting living entities are desirous of becoming equally powerful as the Lord. It's a blanket statement. Every living entity is not a devotee, wants to be God. The dog wants to be God. And if you notice, you see that everyone has a common project. So I'm talking about it. Even if you're a very little guy, a little person in a little position, you manage somehow to be the Lord of all who survey. Mostly by surveying very little. What you do. I had the experience of this. I worked at one time in a little office for a summer job, and there was one lady very low down in the company, but she controlled. Couldn't do your job unless you had supplies. You needed certain kinds of forms, you needed tablets, you needed pencils, you needed erasers. All of this was in the supply closet, and she controlled the key. And you had to be nice to her. If you weren't nice, if she didn't like you, you didn't get any supply. Or what you got was all damaged, made it invisible to everybody. And you knew she was the Lord. So you find most of human life in the left in some way or another, in a little way or a big way, they're not the thought project going. Prabhupada remarked that if they fail to be the master anywhere, then they purchase a dog. You know, I'm the master, roll over, play dead, do my newspaper. So, well, this is what's going on. They're not the project going on in this material world. So he put in this dreaming condition, and Prabhupada has a sense which requires a great deal of meditation on. Therefore, the first sinful will of the entity is to become the Lord. He uses this term, first sinful will. We are reminded of the Christian original sin. Although I was taught in growing up in a Christian environment was that this sin, we had an ancestor who did something wrong, Adam, and he was sin. And we were born in this world and somehow we inherit this sin like a genetic defect. I didn't do it. He did, but somehow I got it. I don't know why. Well, the real answer is that each one of us did. We each have this original sin, we did it. We turned away from Krishna. Anyone who's in this material world has to say that in my deep background, there's a momentous cry. We are suffering from a broken relationship with Krishna. And our whole effort is to repair that relationship. Now, usually when there's a broken relationship in the world, some marriage is having difficulty, and you go to some person who repairs relationships, they always say, well, there's problems on both sides. Maybe one has done worse, but every both are have something they have to do. When it comes to Krishna, we have to say that the fault is 100% mine. He never had a bad feeling toward us. He was always totally merciful. He was always trying to do everything. Even though we were servants and trying to satisfy his senses, he was always trying to give us more pleasure than we were giving him. This was always Krishna's nature. We know from the fault is all. And it's a cry, and once you start to think about, you can't imagine how bad I am. Anyway, we emphasize this because we are not Buddhists. And if you study religions in college or something like that, they always point this out. There are two basic diagnoses of our condition in this world, why we are suffering. Some of the traditions that are impersonalist, like the Shankaraya tradition or the Buddhist tradition, they say it's ignorance. And the personalist tradition, Christianity and so on, they say it's sin. Because sin means a broken relationship, a breach of trust, and it's personal. There's a broken relationship between people. That's what sin is. Where ignorance just means, don't know me. Now, actually, of course, in our Vaishnava tradition, we have both. Because that jnana strand, which emphasizes ignorance, we believe that's part of us. But here Prabhupada says, where does the ignorance come from? Here he's saying, why do the Lord influence the divinity? If it's ignorance, it's just beginningless ignorance. That's all. It's always there. There's no relationship with God anyway. Somehow or other, there's beginning of ignorance. And when we become enlightened, any drama in your body.
It's gone. That's all.
They don't inquire, oh, where do the ignorance come from? Buddha says, that's not a question. I'm dealing with it. This is your problem. And Sarva Sharma is saying, well, it's just there. And people in the West who have gotten a sense of sin given to them by their inherited Christian religion or whatever, they like Buddhism not very much because it's not your fault. You're just here. That's how they understand it. There's no broken relationship. You don't have to feel bad about yourself. It's just your condition. But when there's sin, it's usually followed by guilt. It's followed by guilt. And guilt is considered to be unhealthy. And in one sense it is. But it's also healthy. So this is why, by the way, of course around this verse, although Prabhupada said everything he explained here, people do not sometimes accept Prabhupada's explanation, that we knew what we were doing. That is to say, we had a relationship with Krishna, and we turned away from him. But there are other people that say we were always Maya. We never turned away from him. They're kind of emphasizing this gamma strikeness there. Because we can talk like that. But we have this controversy in this about the origin of the jiva. But Prabhupada's position should be quite clear. Then it's also Bhakti Siddhanta says what the Guru's position. I'll just read a few places. Here's from Bhagavatam 4:28 and the purports of 53 and 54. In the allegorical story of Purunjana, Purunjana has become a queen. The king has died. A Brahman appears. The Brahman represents the superstore. The Brahman says, my dear friend, even though you cannot immediately recognize me, can't you remember that in the past you had a very intimate friend? Unfortunately, you gave up my company. We were friends together, and you gave up my company and accepted the position as the enjoyment. This is what the super soul says to us. When we start to become Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada says, each of the courts, each of which is on the table. You fall down the material world. Somewhere else, Prabhupada reminds that the original hate, we come from God's desire. We desire so many things. And because of things interfering with the fulfillment of our desires, we hate. Even the most basic organism, the littlest tiny squiggle of microbial life in each iteration, it goes to the things that satisfy its senses, stays away from the things that are unstoppable. Each addiction, everyone. Prabhupada said the original desire of the living entity. Why can't I be God? And the original hate, why should Krishna be God? What did he do? So the three situations there. So Prabhupada says in the purport, When the living entity wants to become Krishna himself or imitate Krishna, he falls down into the material world. By misusing his independence, the living entity falls down from the service of the Lord and takes a position in the material world as an enjoyer. Since the living entity remains engaged in the service of the Lord, they both share a blissful life in the spiritual world. However, when the living entity wants to enjoy himself, it falls down into the material world.
Well, this is problems.
Clear instructions of Guru Swami, clear statements of Bhagavad Gita. And of course, when Prabhupada was asked about this issue himself, he wrote a little paper in which it clarifies this point, very interesting. We never had any occasion when we were separated from Krishna. See, right now we are not separated from Krishna, but if one man is dreaming, he forgets himself. You know, that right now we are with Krishna. And actually, for the statements that the living entity never falls down, Prabhupada uses this beauty example. He's saying, we are always in the spiritual world, but we forget ourselves. So we don't lose our relationship with Krishna. It's just that we have forgotten ourselves. This creation of himself is as a seer, as a subject matter, or seeing two things. He's using this example in this verse. But as soon as the dream is over, the scene disappears, the self projected, a product of the whole mind. Vishvacharya Thakur calls it Mansa Pratyaksha. It's direct perception, but it's something that's imaginary. It's Mansa Pratyaksha. Our separation from Krishna, but the seeress remains. Now he's in his original position. Our separation from Krishna is like that. We dream this body and so many relationships with other things. First, the attachment comes to enjoy sense gratification. Then Prabhupada says, even when we are with Krishna, the desire for sense gratification is there. There's a dormant attitude, a sleeping attitude, for forgetting Krishna and creating an atmosphere for joy and living. And then he talks about being at the edge of the beach, the Tatasana Shakti. So he says, we cannot say, therefore, that we are not with Krishna. As soon as we try to be comfortable and immediately we are covered by light, formerly we were with Krishna in his lila. But this, so he says it's formerly we were with Krishna in his lila looks forward. But this covering of maya may be a very, very long duration, therefore, in the interim, many creations are coming and going. Due to this long period of time, it is sometimes said that we are ever conditioned. But this long duration of time becomes very insignificant in what actually comes to Krishna. You're asleep, it looks like so many things are happening, you wake up, you look at it once, what's on the internet? What happened? Anyway, these things are just so you know, this is Prabhupada's clear position. Oh, and also, Prabhupada's another position, just in case you didn't there, Bhakti Siddhanta is quoted in a purport in the 11th canto, 11.238, which is also about this. It's where Vishnu Ashwamedha uses Manas and Parikarcha to describe this. Bhakti Siddhanta says what he says. The living entities are fragmental parts of the Supreme Charter of Krishna, but have fallen from Krishna's kingdom of spiritual pastimes. Because of forgetting the Supreme Lord, they become prone to sinful life and turn their attention to dangerous material objects which fill them with constant fear. That's his understanding. So, this emphasis. So although we are in ignorance, we can search out the cause of this influence. There is the energy of the Lord. Why did the Lord influence us in that way? Because we decided about free will to turn away from Krishna. Actually, we are always with Krishna. There's no question about being with Krishna, but when we become influenced by the Sattva Maya, we forget. Now there's another world. This world, see, there's no God. It just happened by chance. Krishna's influencing so many people to understand this world without God. And so we want to have this playground where we can be appointed. And so we don't need God. Or if he's there, he's off in the background somewhere. Answering my prayers, whatever, give me this, give me that. So long as he does his duty, I'm happy with him, helping him with my sense gratification. But this is, so for us, then what we have to do is to realize that our job to actually become secure is to again re-establish the relationship with the Lord. Those people who are just interested in becoming free believers, they may momentarily come over the clouds, but they come back down again because they haven't gotten to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is this misuse of free will that we have turned away from Krishna. So we need to go through a process of, well, first of all, confession. That is to say, we have to be honest with ourselves and honest with Krishna. And we have to say, yes, I did this. I committed this crime, and I've been a criminal. And I want to come back. And if we approach the Lord in the right way, sincerely asking to come back, not to gratify my senses, but to destroy the desires that are turning me away from Krishna. Oh, by the way, we should understand about what is sense gratification. Because here it's talking about the desire to enjoy that. But you will notice that when there is sense gratification, what happens? If you kind of watch yourself, should you find yourself enjoying the senses, that should happen. We bring our senses into contact with the objects, and there is pleasure. Sanspurcha jaya bhoga. The senses come into contact with the object, and we feel pleasure. So far, that's not yet sense gratification. Because the senses are always coming contrary to the object, and sometimes there's pleasure and sometimes there's pain. And one could have the same attitude toward the pleasure as one has toward the pain. One could just be detached and say, this is the body, this pleasure and this pain. I just tolerate them both like living the sun. So the senses come to the object and there's pleasure. It's okay so far. But when the sense gratification, something else happens. And if you introspect, notice psychologically what happens, is that we start to rejoice in that pleasure. And we have we think of this attitude of, now I have joy. I am enjoying. We take possession of our life and we celebrate. Now somehow I feel myself more real, higher, better, greater, more substantial. I am the enjoyer. And this whatever I enjoy, it's mine. That's why when people enjoy, you'll notice most of the time, unless it's something very shameful, they like to do it in public. They like people to see. They like to appreciate. A man wants to have sex with a woman. Okay, maybe he does that in quiet, in private. But then he likes to take this very beautiful woman and make sure she's dressed up in a little dress that clings nicely to her body. With very high heels, she needs to show off her legs and cut low down so people can see her breasts, and then dress up very beautifully and then take her out so that other men can say, oh, look at you. Say, blindly enjoying. And so, you know, this is. So people, they always like other people to see. People like to buy very expensive cars so people can say, oh, look, he's the enjoyer. So we puff up. We take that object and we think, I am the enjoyer, we puff up. And then because I'm enjoying, I want to control. So, and when this I'm enjoying this object, what does that? Krishna has walked off the scene. Because this object that I'm enjoying, to whom does it belong? Well, actually, it's Krishna's. Everything belongs to Krishna. One of the shocks of my life was hearing a tape of Prabhupada with an Indian gentleman who was converted, had been converted to Christianity. And when the missionaries convert Hindus to Christianity, one of their favorite things is to contrast Krishna, who was a well-known enjoyer of other men's wives and was totally in love, with Jesus, who was a brahmachari. who's pure? This, really, so they do like this. So I could tell this was in the background because this Indian man said, Prabhupada, how can you worship a god who is an adulterer? And Prabhupada said, without pausing for a second, he said, Krishna is not an adulterer. You are the adulterer. All women belong to God. It was the shock of my life because when Prabhupada said, all women belong to God, I felt pain in my heart. And I thought, all of them are just one person. And I realized that I was standing as a Krishna. So, everything belongs to Krishna. And if you want to see Krishna, we have to use everything in Krishna's service. Then Krishna appears. But as long as we're stealing from Krishna, so we shouldn't think that my original crime of turning away from Krishna in the material world is that was the past. If I'm still enjoying, even purposely, I'm still, to some extent, a criminal. I'm a criminal. I'm just maybe a class A criminal. See? So we have to get over this. And because Krishna, we have not seen Krishna face to face, actually there's something wrong with it. This is authorized. Mahaprabhu says, Mama Durdaya Krishna Nihaja Nihaja. And he's thinking, he's talking like us. He's talking about the holy man. How in the holy man, here is Krishna, in the supremely available, portable, thick bag of mouth, none different than Krishna. And the holy name is here, he available, he's in the chant, so many names, each one filled with potency, not difficult to chant, not like trying what you have to do to chant, be a real Brahma to chant, you know, Lady Mantras, so easy to chant. Tava kripa, and this is your mercy, but then you're so merciful. Tava kripa, your mercy, and mama durvaya, and my misfortune. Is that I'm still not interested. I have no attraction. I have no attraction. I have to force my mind to concentrate on the holy name. This is the durvaya. Actually, Prabhupada translates this, Mama Durvaya translates this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. My misfortune is that I commit offenses while chanting, and therefore no attraction arises. So this is Anartya Vritti. This verse is about the clearing stage of chanting. In that clearing stage, one has to recognize my anarthas and my offenses against the holy name, and then how do I make progress? By obeying. We cannot become free from these offenses and these anarthas without the mercy of the Lord. How do we get the mercy of the Lord? By obeying. By crying. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, by crying at the feet of the holy name. He says, if one cries like this for a few days, all the anarthas will go away. A few days. We can cry without getting on top or suggesting very fast. So we have to want them to go away. They will go away, the Lord can remove them. And we have to really not want them there. We cannot be saying, please remove my sins and offenses or my enjoying act. But really what it is described as karmashan. The knot of the heart is this karma, this strong desire to enjoy this world. That has to go. And if I'm saying, yes, I want it to go away, but in 10 years, St. Augustine, thank you, and his favorite remark, that when I was young and immature, I prayed to the Lord, Lord, give me chastity, but not just yet. We have to want it now. So we can't say, yes, remove my sins of this, but in just in 10 years, maybe a few years. Or remove all of my material desires, but not this one. Not to pray like that is also an offense. To maintain material desires is an offense against the holy name. Having material desires is our own condition, but that's not yet an offense until we maintain them. This is how we have to pray to Krishna. And then if we do like that, then what comes next? Shanaya Pansani Chenantarori Vandini Kriya Sankara Low. This feeling oneself low, like a straw, is not an artificial position of a devotee. One devotee said to Prabhupada, how can I become humble? Meaning, as you can tell in the voice, how can I, with so many good qualities, I'm in America, so many wonderful things, and how can I possibly think myself into this unnatural, artificial position of being humble? The thing to realize is, humble is only we are very small. That the idea of a straw or a blade of grass is natural. Think of all the Jews, how many there are. Just think of them packed together, so tight and uncountable. Now, what is the appropriate body for something, these little 1/4 10 that are different there inside of the Jews? So many of them packed together, you know, uncountable. It's just like other grass up there. It just looks like a lot of grass. That's really the right body for us. It's not unnatural. Neither is it low self-esteem. This is the other thing when people start thinking about becoming humble. They think, oh, isn't that low self-esteem? Psychologists tell them it's bad for us. Anything else is bad for us. But humility is one thing, low self-esteem is something else. Low self-esteem means things that I am absolutely worthless. I have no value to live on. But a devotee knows that I am loved by Krishna no matter what. Even though I have turned away from Krishna, even though I have come from the material world, he has come with me and has supersoled in the first place. And then he has moved heaven and earth to give me back. He descended as Mahatma. He made his service through so many things. Look, Srila Prabhupada. I was sitting in Philadelphia wondering what I'm going to do with my life, how can I get out of this place, the material world. And suddenly, thinking maybe I have to go to India to find a guru. And suddenly, writing my college campus, Hare Krishna. Look at the trouble Prabhupada went through. But how much difficulty and discouragement he had, and yet he did all this. Why did he do it? He did it for me. So no matter what I did, the manifestation of Krishna's mercy is that Krishna cares for me. So in that we can be secure. No matter what us from despair. And so we should be grateful to Krishna. These two things go together. So anyway, this process that we have to repair this broken relationship. Our method is by cultivating the holy man. We cultivate the holy man. We will confess, repent, we will be sorry. We'll cry at the Lord's feet and beg for the Lord's mercy. And the Lord will forgive us. As long as we accept it. He's ready to forgive us, and then our relationship is restored. This is the process. It's the same process as there. Any real theistic, spiritual activity. It's also in our movement. So that's why Prabhupada wants to emphasize the personal side of this, because it has to do with what we need to go through. Yeah, in order to progress in Krishna consciousness. Okay, any questions? Yes, please.
I asked this question in class before, and I've been wondering about it for 30 years, so now that's
really for another 30 years, you won't be here.
Can you explain what's actually meant by the phrase part in part and parcel of God?
In standard English in America, part and parcel is a to say that something is part and parcel of something means that it belongs to and is related to. I think it doesn't say any more than a tiny fragmental part. But the idea of parcel is bound up with. It's a part of God, but also. Part of the whole, so that we're not a detached part, or a separated part, or an isolated part. Rather, we are in Krishna's energy, we have a relationship. It's like the parts of my body. My hand is part and parcel of my body. Because it's working together as an organized thing. Whereas I would say this pane of glass is part of the window, but it's not part and parcel of the window. because it's just one element, they don't interact with anything, it's just there. So the idea of a parcel is bound together in a close relationship. Right? Parcel means you tie something up. I'll look it up. Any other questions? Does that solve it, or are you still going to have 30 more years? Yeah, it's an expression. Integrated thought, yeah. It all involves a center, right? A component, phrase, part, and a parcel. Take a see what they say. This is the object of the teacher. But anyway, it means there's an integral part. Yeah, it has its own separate, That's the other idea of your part, but the parcel also indicates that you're the Here's a quotation. The moral law of the conscience is part and parcel of the man himself. That's a usage. This being part and parcel of my present subject, we're talking about something that really belongs to it. What's a part that really belongs to it? According to the ultimate authority of the English language,
there's still, whatever it was, the thing he went to Krishna, understand who is Christian Liberty stuff, thinking about money and women and power. But I'm not necessarily thinking, please Christian, please stop me from thinking that you're the only enjoyer. What is that? Is there a transition?
Well, I suppose it's different for different devotees. What it is becoming ultimately free from karma and mishra bhakti. Karma being the desire to enjoy the highest way. Prabhupada was still so pure devotion, so it's yana kamara and other times. So we say that and we talk about it. And the thing about mind is it's certainly comfortable. I mean, in the material world doesn't look so bad because your suffering has decreased. But we have to understand that when we're seeing that. One is, of course, we should understand that even in God's eye, there's trouble in paradise and so on. And then birth, death, old age, and disease are there, no matter what your status in the material world, no matter how pious you are, birth, death, old age, and disease. But I think the more powerful thing should gradually be that one wants to come closer and closer to Krishna. And that one can begin to, that desire increases, one can begin to see that this attachment and piety is an anartha. It's something I don't really want. It's even this little bit of karmasha I have, even if it's not expressed in a sinful way, is still separating me from Krishna. And therefore our relationship right now, when I'm pious, is a little formal, and in a distance, I want to come close to Krishna. And especially appreciate Krishna as Krishna, as you know, in his confidential Vrindavan pastimes. Now, this is a greater good for my real happiness and for the real pleasure. If I really want to please Krishna much more fully, I will do this. So it's just a part of the process of getting to desire to restore a relationship with Krishna to the fullest extent of extreme intimacy. And intimacy that is living in our hearts, we always want. But without Krishna as the basis of such intimacy, it doesn't exist. I can only have that intimacy with other living entities, or other human beings, only if Krishna is in the center of it. And the sense gratification is just, there's me and the sense object, or two persons or two things. But Krishna consciousness is the least three. And Krishna is the middle term of all relationships. And then, Prabhupada says that when we love Krishna, and then that love spreads out to include everyone and everything. Because there's just a realization. It's a question of not, although being here in this body, I'm no longer living in the material world. It disappears. For a devotee, it is as good as life. And why? Because everywhere is Krishna. Up, down, below, inside, outside. And this clearly is Prabhupada's vision all the time. That everywhere you see Krishna. And that everywhere there's no disturbance, there's no distress. And it's always Krishna in various interesting manifestations and forms. Every moment of life becomes interesting. It's much better than piety. So we have to become attracted to that. It will be different from different people. And if we need it, we should find those people who seem to be closer to that than I am and associate with them. It's catching. It becomes very attractive. Can you see this desire, not even the Shiva, but just the desire to actually fall totally in love with Krishna and don't worry about anything else.
We were discussing the apparent field of the jiva in the material world. I have heard the description, because it's actually another Prabhupada wrote in the Oxford House of the waxing and waning of the moon. This is how the moon appears in the waxing and waning, but actually it's always full. And it says that in some level the moon appears before the material world, but actually it's always liberated. And I was wondering more about the mechanism of it, like I have heard out here in the childhood of billions of births. Yet we're still in the spiritual world.
Well, there's a certain geometry that's really beyond our conception.
Because I really feel like I'm getting that. Is it because of the difference of time life and sleep that I'm thinking that verse in the Brahma Sutra, there's only present and there, there's the past and the future, and the time that passes in the past?
It's partly that. It's partly. I mean, there's a story about King Kukmin, who was looking for a husband for his daughter. Couldn't find anyone. He went to Lord Brahma to say, can you find a husband for my daughter? And Brahma was briefly delayed in seeing him because he was listening to some Gandharva was serenading him. And he said to King Kukmin, you know, anyone who actually would have wanted a husband for your daughter passed away millions of birth years ago, but it was just one brief moment in Brahma's, because you know, Brahma's 100 years is billions and billions of years. Because it's like that, you know, there's a temporal relativity that goes with the universe. So you go up to Brahma and come back down again, and you know, a minute has passed there. Kalpas. So just go up to the top of the spiritual world. Let's say I'm in the spiritual world, I fall down and come back. Did I ever leave? How long was I gone for?
So
that's another way.
What's going on with the jiva in the consciousness at that point of the material world? Is it just like a passing thought?
Vanishingly small. I can't explain it anymore. So anyway, I wrote a vintage article about this time frame. But you see, because the spiritual world is also, although there's no past, present, future, there are still past times. And actually there's transcendental time. Prabhupada said this in Bhagavatam. There's time in the spiritual world, but it has no power to control activities. I cannot even come close to imagining, or if I even knew it, to explain it. You know, I mean, it's just so far from. I mean, we are really in the prison of past, present, and future, three dimensions, and so on. It's the real situation is very, very different. Even this material dimension, you have no idea. It's far, so much further up than anybody thinks. That's all I can say. It's definitely a better stop. Sri Prabhupada, please. Thank you. Therefore, any activity other than transcendental loving service to the Lord is more or less a rebellious action against the supreme will. All through the fact of incurable philosophy and mysticism are more or less against the sense of subordination to the Lord. Any living entity engaged in such a rebellious activity is more or less condemned by the laws of material nature, which work with the subordination of the Lord. That's far. More or less.